Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for the Boner Planet Podcast is presented by
Dead Downwind, Tinks, Shadowhunter Blinds, Burris Optics, Dead Ringer, The Grind, Bomar Archery, Element Outdoors, Reveal Cellular Camera, HHA and HHA USA, Black Eagle Arrows,
Cobra Archery,
Camp Chef,
Novix Outdoors,
and caffeine support provided by Deer Camp Coffee.
Hey guys, welcome to the Bowhunter Planet Podcast. Myself, Dave Thompson, and Tim Mazzarana. We are just having some fun with our friend Blake Mallory, who wrote a book. I was going to let Blake tell the story of the book, what it's called and how to find it, but also kind of let's learn a little bit about Blake and this book and how he wrote it. Take it away.
I wrote this book out of just all my experiences, but I've been hunting in Michigan for a long time and been traveling all over the place and started to do basically low budget hunts. And figuring out how to put them together and being able to hunt certain pieces of property without spending a ton of money. Basically, a long time ago, I watched a hunt on TV that was supposed to be a blue collared hunt, and it was a $13,000 hunt. And I'm like, there's got to be a better way than what's going on. And we started off hunting Canada every single year, and it got brutally cold with a bunch of deer kill off. And we started venturing out, and probably about 12 years ago, I started to really do some research and figure out how to do these out-of-state hunts and what to plug in. And it just kind of took off from there. And after so many of these hunts, doing about 3-4 every single year, I finally started to put it down on paper. And that's kind of what just got me into writing this book.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. It's exciting. You always think about like, oh man, I should write a book, but you actually did it. So it's really exciting and awesome because, I mean, right now I could literally write a book how much I hate Tim. I mean, it'd be so like pages and pages of dealing
10, with at least 10 different chapters.
No, but in seriousness though, that is really cool, especially, and I like you sent me a copy. I'm definitely going to start reading it. Like I was telling you, I got to page in before the kids are yelling, which they're yelling out here. So hopefully we don't hear them, but I do see you said you graduated from GVSU, which I did go to for 1 year, just so we're on the same page. Gotcha. And then I ended up going to Central after that, but it was a good time. And Tim and I had some fun down there. It was good.
Yeah. I graduated Grand Valley with natural resource management and went to aquatic biology. COVID last year, you know, everybody had a bunch of time on their hands and whatnot. And I'd been kind of working on this for a couple of years, and I finally just locked down and busted it out and wrote it all. Basically a lot of the book is just basically my stories about, you know, what I did wrong or what I did right and what I learned from it. And just kind of about how I go about putting together a trip from start to finish. The one thing that nobody ever talks about is how much an actual hunt costs. Nobody talks about the tag cost. Nobody talks about the travel. And I kind of break all of that down between food, lodging, you know, where to save money, where to actually spend it, where it's important, you know, things like your tag and your license, you're not getting away from that. You're going to spend that no matter what, but, you know, and then also talk about, you know, things of how to apply a little bit on some of these out of state hunts and, you know, who to call. And I mean, I talk to DNR officers in all these states that I go to, sometimes to the point where sometimes I bug them. But when you go out of state, you know, you don't know the rules. Like, you know, I've hunted Michigan my entire life. I, you know, stay on top of the rules and the rule changes every single year. But, you know, you go out of state, you're a newbie. They do things a lot different.
Well, it can be costly too, right? I mean, if you make a mistake and get busted.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Yeah. I with all these out of state hunts I do, that's the last thing I ever want to have it as an expense is doing something wrong. But, you know, some states you don't have to put the tag on the animal. You just got to keep it in your pocket. You know, there's different things like that, you know, certain check-ins states and stuff like that. But
so are you a writer by nature? So, and the reason why I ask is I'm actually, when I graduated college, I was a biology major with an emphasis in natural resources in fisheries. So it sounds very similar to your degree, but I can't write a sentence.
Yeah. I'm by no means a writer. I just had these experiences that I had. And I was discussing a lot of this with my dad. I go on a lot of these trips with, and he said, it's about time you actually started writing some of this stuff down. So, you know, getting into the finer details of the stuff that people just don't talk about. And like I said, you know, a lot of it comes down to the money. I mean, I did a hunt where I shot one of the biggest bucks on public land I ever shot. And I only spent $280 on the entire trip.
Wow.
Tag included, but that was back when Ohio's tag was a little bit cheaper. But I mean, there's a lot of ways to be able to go on an exciting, you know, out of state adventure without dropping, you know, $3,000-$5,000, what most people expect when they go out of state.
So what's been your favorite?
Honestly, right now I'm kind of on a hot streak out in Kansas, going out there, public land out there. And, you know, I really don't have that much. I mean, tag is about $450 out there, so that's the majority of the cost. But from there, you know, I've got an Airbnb we split with four guys, and it's $100 a guy for an entire week. And I've been lucky enough to tag three really nice bucks out there the last 3 years. But that's the other thing I kind of break down, you know, timing of the year and the seasons, you know. So like Kansas rifle season is after Michigan's deer gun season. You know, Ohio's got a bow season that goes to February. So there's all these different opportunities that my season's basically extended by going out of state. And so Kansas is probably one of my favorites. Although Iowa, I drew my tag this year. It's been 3 years since I've been out there, and I didn't tag one last time I was out there, but I hunted out there for 16 days and it was one of the greatest hunting experiences I've ever had in my entire life. But yeah, so this year as of right now, I've got my Iowa and my Kansas tag in my pocket. So
awesome. So what would you say, and it's okay if you don't want to give it away, the biggest mistake people make?
You know, I would say the biggest mistake people make is thinking that, you know, they're going to go out of state and they're going to see a bunch of bucks. They're going to see a lot of big bucks without putting in much work. And they think it's going to be a lot easier than their home state. And it's just, you know, it couldn't be farther from the truth. I mean, granted, you know, you go somewhere like Iowa or Kansas or Wyoming, you know, you see a lot more game and you do see bigger bucks, but you still got to put the time in. You still got to do the scouting. You've still got to be, you know, willing to bust your hump the entire time you're out there. And it's just not a thing where I go and party. It's, you know, sun up, sun down, I'm busting my tail. And like last year, Kansas, yeah, I tagged out, but it was on the last day at 10:30 in the morning. We were leaving that night. So, and we hunted for 8 straight days. So it still comes with a lot of hard work. And that's something that people, they think they're going out of state. They're just going to, you know, sleep in, stumble out to a stand and, you know, see 4 or 5 different bucks and pick which one they think is the coolest and shoot it. But especially when you're doing it on a budget. Now, if you know, some of those hunts that you're spending $5,000-$7,000 to do with a guide, sure. But no, I used to guide. I guided whitetail hunts and turkey hunts. You know, I've seen the big money come out of the pockets for deer. And I think part of my challenge that I enjoy is, you know, what kind of hunting experience and what kind of deer can I put my tag on without spending an arm and a leg. my wife basically a long time ago, she basically told me I can go on do any of these hunt trips as long as the money doesn't come out of her savings account. So I kind of taken that to the extreme and figured out how to go on 3-4 of these every single year and really be dedicated to it.
Hence why we started this podcast. Yeah.
Exactly.
No, actually, I was just saying, Tim, I pulled my bear permit this year. So I'm really pumped for Michigan.
That's awesome.
And I was, you know, once I had it established in my mind, then I started thinking about like, what do I got to do for that? You know? And then the first thing comes to my mind is like, oh, I got to hire someone to like work the land for me. Cause I can't travel to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan every week to put in bear bait and stuff like that. Right. So that's like all part of the budget. Now I got to figure out a budget that's going to cost me to go hunt this bear. Just like if I would have pulled an elk tag, mm-hmm. I would have had to pay elk fees, right? To go have someone let me on their land, whatever the rules are for elk. I know that you have to have a guide or something. So, but you're right. These are things that you just don't think about. And then like today, it just so happens that I found out today I got it. And then now we're talking about budget and all that. I got to figure all that out. And, you know, I agree in the sense that some people do have to think through like every cost. I personally don't look at the things like fuel and all that because I don't want to know.
Yeah, but
I can afford it, so it doesn't bother me as much, you know. But I guess like if it was somewhere I couldn't afford it, or I really did want to calculate the exact amount, it absolutely could be done for sure.
Yeah, and you know, some of that stuff is what I go through. The older I get, I mean, you know, 5-6 years ago, sleeping in the back of my truck was awesome. Now the older I get, you know, give me a bed. I need a shower.
Exactly.
We did a muzzleloader January hunt in Ohio, stayed in an outfitter tent. I've got an outfitter tent and, you know, froze our tail off and didn't have a shower for 5 days. And, you know, it was miserable. And I, you know, since then I basically said, I'd really like to have a shower wherever I'm staying. So, you know, some of those things comes with added expense, but, even like down to, but what a lot of things that always happens that I always see on hunt trips is you go out of state and you've got a couple of guys in one truck. And it always seems like, oh, I'll grab this tank. Someone always kind of gets screwed and, you know, someone always ends up paying more. And I kind of have like little tips on how to basically even that out and lay that kind of stuff out going into it. Nice. You know, with the guys that I've been going with, we've been going so many, you know, we're kind of set in our ways and how we do this kind of stuff when we're just used to it, second nature. But a lot of that kind of tips and stuff is what I put in the book.
Think how cool it would be. I don't know why, this just came to my head, but like when you made the comment, like, you know, we were kind of set on what we do and all this stuff. What if you took you out of that picture and I put you in our hunt camp and like I left our hunt camp, went in your hunt camp. Wouldn't that be an interesting concept? Like to actually move a hunter out of their comfort zone. You know what I mean, Tim? Like, think about it. Like, that would be weird, right? But at the same
time, I'd be happy to get rid of you, first of all. But it is. It's like, what was that one show? It was Wife Swap.
Yeah, right? Where like one Hunter wife Swap.
Lived at somebody else's house.
For yeah, I guess you're right. That is similar.
You kind of see the differences and the way that things are being done. And
well, yeah, you get
kind of stuff. I tell you, it's probably custom. Room for improvement in our hunt.
Oh God, there's room for improvement in all hunt camps. Actually, some hunters are pretty diehard, so I give them that, you know, but the thing is I'm like a person who wants to do hunting and fun. So it's like a mix for me. I'm not always after the biggest buck. I'm not after, you know, and I mean, it's obvious in my track record. It's not something I care too much about. I do love hunting. I love deer hunting specifically. And don't get me wrong. I'm like any other hunter. If I could see a giant buck and shoot it, I want to shoot it, but you know, I don't know if I'm willing to put in that much work, I guess, is the problem. So I don't feel like I deserve it compared to like people who are like literally diehard. I'm the guy that's going to get lucky and the big buck's going to come in front of me and I'm going to shoot it.
Well, I know those guys.
That's
sure.
Going to happen to me if I ever get one that big. But yeah. No, that's...
But a lot of that comes down to knowing who you're going with. You know, I got a certain group of guys. I know I'm going to go and have a fun time. And we don't care if we shoot a deer. You know, and you've got that aspect of the guys.
And that could be a hunt.
Yeah. And it can be just as fun as a hunt as where you go and everybody tags out or memorable at the same time. I mean, hunt trips are what you put into them and what you take away from them. It doesn't have anything to do about the antler size.
It's a good point because like this bear hunt, it's going to be all business, right? I'm definitely going to have fun. I want to go and I'm only going with probably one other person. So like to get this done is like business. I'm taking off vacation days from work. I'm, mm-hmm. you know, this is like a serious thing in my mind. Like, I'm not gonna be drinking all night, waking up with a hangover. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going out to get a beer, and there's nothing stopping me.
Well, that's a tag that took you some time to get. I know I didn't get my bear and I didn't get my elk. I checked today too. And
yeah, that was my 8 points. So yeah, okay. So that's it. This is a reset after this. So you know, Kevin put in for it. He had a 7. He didn't get it. And I might have 8 or 9. I think I had 8. And then he, and we don't, you know, we put in for an area up in the Upper Peninsula that he has access to, that he, you know, we have hunters that are live up there that we can bait for us and all that, cameras out. But that's a good point. Like, I want to get a camera on there now, you know, have him put it out there with the wireless camera. Hopefully it works out there. But if I can get that to go right to my phone, how exciting would that be, right? Start to see pictures of the bear pop in and know that they're there.
Yeah, and that's a difference of a tag that you draw over the counter every single year and a tag that you waited for and earned. Like my Iowa tag, it's business. Yeah. I'm going out there, it's straight up business. You know, Ohio, I buy that every single year. I can hunt. It's right across the border here. I mean, I was hunting. I actually grazed a big buck on January 25th last year. You know, I like taking that tag at the end of the season. That means I still hunted all the way through. So yeah, I mean, it just all depends on the situation.
We went to a few years back, Ron Rezel and I, one of the other hunters, went to we got invited to come to an outfitter in Ohio, and it cost us some money, but not a ton of money, because it was like a media deal. And anyway, we went for a week in the rut and we bow hunted, and I never hunted more hard in my life than I hunted on that trip. And it was straight, even though it was like him and I, and it should have been, you know, we did have fun, but like, it wasn't like a hunt camp that like Tim and I go to. It was like, we were out there all day, every day, and it was miserable. I mean, it was freaking freezing. And I didn't want to like call the guide and be like, hey, come get me, you know, cause it was just like, it was so cold. But at the same time, I felt like a moron if I didn't stay out there. I'm like, there's huge bucks on camera, like 180 inch deer.
Yeah.
And I can't, if I leave to go out for lunch, that's the dumbest thing I could do. Like, I just got, I'm going to have to man up and sit here all day. And yeah, I did. And it was terrible.
Sure, yeah.
It was terrible. In a tree stand all day, freezing.
So when you guys are going out as a group, like to a new area, how do you guys decide who hunts where?
Well, it kind of comes down to who I'm hunting with and what. You know, I got certain groups of guys in my group who are, I call them grinders and finders. I got guys that are just all about being mobile, move, move, move. And then I got guys who will, you show them one good spot, they're going to sit there for 8 straight days, sun up, sun down. You know, I'm kind of a mixture of both of those, but it kind of depends on who I'm with. The other thing I talk about is, you know, what kind of group you're going with. I break down, you know, basically who you're going with and how I like 2 and 2. I don't, 3 is always a third wheel. Anytime I'm doing these kind of hardcore, out of state hunts where I'm hunting, you know, a piece of public that I've never seen before, or even a piece of private that, you know, I might've only seen once or twice. It, you know, it all kind of comes down to that, but you know, I like to videotape a lot of my hunts. I've been videotaped for Michigan Whitetail Pursuit and editing for them. And so, you know, that all comes into play too. If someone tags out, we're doubling up, we're going to try to video what we can. So it really comes down to, you know, just who we are, who we're with. And, you know, going into it, I'm not going on a trip with someone who I've never met before. I don't know their personality, because I think it might take a little bit away from the experience I have. You know, going with my dad is always a special event. You know, anytime we can have, you know, we shot 2 bucks together on the same day down in Ohio on a piece of property we leased and had only seen 2 days but prior to that. So, you know, a lot of that comes down to who you're with and just figuring out the personalities that you're hunting with.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's cool.
So where, okay. So you've been Kansas. Where else have you been?
Nebraska, Wyoming, North Dakota, Iowa, Ohio, and Indiana. Been doing a ton of scouting in Missouri. Still haven't pulled the trigger on that one yet. But I told my wife, I said, my goal is to either hunt or fish in all 50 states. Cool. So plugging away with that. I mean, I fished in quite a bit of states, and I just did a pig hunt down in Florida this spring. So just kind of chipping away, but deer, you know, Kansas is one I can't get away from right now just cause it's been so good to me. But I like to move on. I think Oklahoma is one that I'm probably going to venture to here soon. But like I said, I like that challenge of something new and trying to attack something new and not getting too much into a rut. I got into a rut with a spot down in Ohio a few years back and just kind of started getting overrun. A lot of guys, and it became a pretty well-known secret. And so now I'm hunting different spots in Ohio, and Ohio and Indiana are right across the border for me, being in Southern Michigan. So I buy those every single year and keep venturing around there.
Where would you say that? So if I'm going for the first time out of state, let's say Ohio, for example, what's the first thing that I should be doing when looking for hunting land to go to?
Well, first thing is, as I always say, is read the rule book cover to cover, figure out what you're up against and what you got going on there. And then the other thing is so if you want to hunt public, obviously there's a lot of opportunity. You're going to do more work. You got to put boots on the ground or at least do a ton of e-scouting going into that. A lot of times we go turkey hunting kind of as a scouting tool earlier in the year for that. But basically the first time I ever did one was in Ohio, and I emailed just a ton of outfitters, just nonstop, basically told them I didn't want them to do anything for me. I just wanted a piece of land for a week. And they all shot me down for a long time. And then one guy finally reached out to me. He actually gave me a lot of insight. These outfitters will lease a ton of pieces of property, and they don't have any hunters that they run through there because they might be too far away from their camp. They can't say no to leasing these pieces up because someone else is going to lease it up and they're going to lose that opportunity down the road, but they want to try to get some return in their investment out of it. So typically any type of money that they can bring in for it, they'll take. I had a late muzzler is a great example in Ohio. Muzzler is getting a little out of hand in Ohio, but if they don't have somebody booked up on a piece of property, you can usually lowball them, and they're going to get mad. They do. And you got to be able to be flexible as well. So you got to be willing to walk away. And I had an outfitter that I was on the phone with a couple of years ago, and I offered him, about half of what he wanted for a piece of property. And he told me no. And I told him, that's fine. I said, let me know last minute if you don't feel it, and I'll still be flexible because I'm going to hunt public land. Well, he ended up not even getting off the phone conversation with me and gave it to me for what I was asking for. So,
awesome.
And we ended up, I had an opportunity at a drop time buck, and my buddy ended up shooting one on the last day. So, it ended up working out good, but there's, you got to be flexible when you're doing stuff on a budget, whether you're hunting, but you always got to have public land in your back pocket, no matter what happens with private land as well.
So, Blake, tell us about your background there. You got a lot of nice bucks on those walls, man. Is this your whole lifetime? Like what we got back here?
It actually keeps going that way over that way too. There's a bunch of
holy cow.
I used to do taxidermy. I was a guide for turkey and whitetail. Once I got out of doing taxidermy, I started doing all Euro mounts. So all my Euro mounts are over that way, and it's just a lot cheaper. I actually had a guy tell me, he's like, would you rather spend $450 on a mount or put it towards another hunt? And I was like, all right. Got a valid point right there.
Good point. Yeah, no doubt.
So, yeah. But, I think those three right over there, those three down there, Kansas, the middle one's my biggest buck. That one or the one right up here behind me was.
Is that a drop tine on that one? Am I looking at that right?
No, I don't have any drop tine ones. No? I wish it was. Oh, there's a couple of these I have sheds from. That one's my Michigan one.
Maybe that's what I'm seeing. Okay.
Yeah, that's his shed from the year before that I found.
Cool.
Yeah, that's a nice buck.
There's so many antlers back there, it's hard to pick out just one,
Yeah, my shed collection is all up through there, all up in there.
That's cool.
Last year's shed hunt was unbelievable. I ended up one of my best years, so I think that's all 35.
How much land do you hunt on in Michigan?
So I moved from Grand Rapids area to Southern Michigan Sturgis area, and I had nowhere to hunt. I took what I do out of state and I applied it to Michigan, started knocking on doors, started talking to everybody I know. I ended up stumbling and kind of squeezing my way into a lease with a couple of buddies that I met down here. We really only have about 35 acres of timber, and then the rest of that is agriculture. And then another one, I got a permission from a farmer who actually lets like 15 guys hunt it. But most of them are gun hunters. So I actually took the biggest buck I've ever killed in Michigan, that one right there last year on that piece.
Nice. Awesome.
So yeah, I mean, it, I really don't have that much Michigan opportunity, where I moved to. I kind of was set in my ways and all the property I had hunted up towards Grand Rapids, and then, kind of got that ripped away from me. And, so I just kind of been, you know,
take what about it. What about your bow rig? What you running this year?
Elite Ritual. I got it, I think 2 years ago or a year ago. And then also, I've been trying to plug away with it, but I shoot a recurve as well. Nice. I've hunted with it a couple of years, and I actually shot my turkey on video with a recurve this year.
Cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, it was the first thing I ever killed with a recurve.
We've been talking a lot about recurves lately, actually. Tim's been wanting to try one, and we actually, one of the guys on our team is real big into recurves and traditional. He's been bothering the crap out of us by starting a traditional area of our show. And so we told them, we're like, listen here, Bob, if you want to do it, I'm willing to, but I'm a joke shooting a traditional. Like I'm going to get called out in a heartbeat. I'm so bad at it.
I've maybe shot a traditional, you know, a dozen times since I've been an adult.
Yeah. Yeah. I hunted an entire year with it where I told myself that's all I was going to touch. I wasn't going to touch my compound. Well, about October 25th, I grabbed my compound that year. Traditional hunt is one of the hardest things, and it's a mindset. You got to be committed to it. And so
now, did you have missed opportunities when you were traditional hunting where you would have had a shot had you had a compound?
No, I did hit one really nice buck in Michigan. It was actually on October 1st, and we tracked that thing for 400 yards, and I would have got it had I had a compound. It would have been a chip shot. It was 21 yards. I mean, I always say after about 20 yards with my traditional, it starts to get a little hairy, but that's the dilemma I'm in right now. I really, really want to hunt with my recurve in Iowa, but I do not want a 170 standing out at about 45 yards where my compound's no problem, but recurve, there's no way.
Got to do the little belly crawl and hold it sideways, right?
Yeah. actually, a couple of years ago, I shot a buck with my compound, and then I was like, okay, it was only October, like 22nd. I'm like, I don't want to tack out. I'm going to hunt my recurve. And I had a monster buck. He's actually a three-legged buck that the neighbors call tripod. And they've never seen him in the daylight. And I had him at 22 yards.
Wow.
And I didn't shoot. The main reason I didn't shoot was because there was a smaller eight and a doe right underneath me. And I thought he'd come closer. Whereas if those deer weren't there, I probably would have taken the shot at 22 yards. But yeah, so compound, you know, got a lot more confidence with that. That Ritual that I've been shooting is a really nice bow.
Yeah, that's cool.
When you go out of state, do you travel with a trailer behind you? I mean, I got to imagine, like, if you're going out of state, like, if you're hunting in trees, are you using climbers? Are you using ground blinds? Like, what's your go-to when doing those travel hunts?
Well, it all depends. Like, when I went to North Dakota early season, we had a couple tree stands with us, but mostly it was on the ground. When we go to Kansas, it's all on the ground. We made fun of my dad and my buddy. They brought climbers out there. I was like, what tree are you going to put it in? They're, you know, where I shot my deer. Yeah. Where I shot my deer last year, there wasn't a tree for 5 miles. And, you know, but like when I go down to Ohio and stuff, yeah, we're pretty loaded down with tree stands. I run a couple different lone wolves. I always bring 2-3 climbers with me because I'll leave one and move depending on what state, because some states you can't leave it out. It all depends on what I'm going. Like Iowa, it's just me and one buddy. We're taking two trucks. We don't know what kind of, you know, when we get out there, if we're hunting in the same area or south together, we'll ride with each other. But one of us might go north, one of us might go south in the morning. So we always bring two trucks there. When we go to Kansas, we bring two trucks for four guys. The amount of equipment out there is very minimal with rifles. And we're just putting 15, 20 miles on hiking every single day. So it all just kind of depends. But no, I've never really brought a trailer. Canada was the only time I really, really locked down. We brought trailers and stuff because we would bring quads and stuff on crown land. You'd be so far back if you shot a deer. It was pretty treacherous getting it out.
Awesome, man. Well, I can't wait to read more about your tips and tricks. Book's called The Non-Resident Hunter, How to Destination Deer Hunt on a Budget. So you said earlier, I think right before we started the recording, that they can find it on Amazon.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah, and you can also, it looks like you get it for free if you do the Kindle Unlimited. So some people might already have that. It's zero cost to you to read it. And so that's an option. Or they have, it looks like, a low cost as well to just buy it. So there's a sometimes that works good. It's just like Twitch. If you're a gamer, it's free. You know, if you have Amazon, yeah. Prime, you get a free Twitch account. You know, you can sub for free. It's just like this Kindle idea. It's pretty cool. Thanks, Blake. We appreciate your time, man. And let's catch up in the fall here after after opening day and see how we're all doing here.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, all right, Blake.
Thank you. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.